Drive Time on RTE Radio 1 with National Irish Bank. The bank that brought Danske Bank's international expertise to Ireland is now bringing the Danske Bank name.
Just coming up to 11 minutes past six, you're listening to Drive Time with Philip Boucher-Hayes, and we're going to return now to our main story today, the conviction of Patrick Whelan and William McAteer on 10 charges in the Anglo-Irish Bank trial. Joining me now, Tom Lyons, senior business correspondent with the Irish Times, who's also the co-author of the Fitzpatrick's tapes. Tom, good evening to you. It's fair to say you've probably forgotten more about what was going on inside Anglo-Irish Bank than most of us will ever know. Tell me, from your point of view, did this trial lay bare anything new about the way the bank was operating at that time?
I don't think it was so much about the bank that we found the new revelations. I think the most interesting thing in terms of new stuff related to the central bank and the financial regulator, where we saw a number of documents from them in relation to this transaction, which at first were very well kept and were very well ordered and very well structured. And then as time went on and various key meetings take place, we started seeing the financial regulator stopping taking notes and stopping, keeping an exact record of what was going on and what was being said between its executives and the chief executive of the bank, David Drum. I thought that was, to me, the most revelatory new thing from the whole trial was this incredible, laissez-faire or failure by the financial regulator to really get stuck in and find out what was going on and keep a record of it.
Nonetheless, the defendants did, or the defence was made on their behalf, that all of the actions that they thought that they were taking were reasonable and done in the best interests of not just Anglo-Irish Bank, but the Irish economy.
Yeah, that came across very strongly. The defence team constantly returned to the risk that if Sean Quinn dumped all of his shares onto the market at once or closed off his CFD position, that this would cause Anglo to collapse and that there'd be a sort of a domino effect which would take all the other banks down with it. So this was something that was really, they returned to again and again, which was this very, this crisis and this sense that, that there is this inevitable move towards, desperate times and desperate moments. And they did something which, that they shouldn't have done, which is round up the Maple 10, but they did it having, exhausted all other avenues.
Mm. One of the things that will be apparent to anybody thinking about this verdict now, and I suppose, in fairness, it was a point that people could have extracted a long time ago from reading your book, is that it is very necessary to make distinctions, not just between banks, but between bankers as well and what they did at this time, rather than lumping everybody in together.
Well, I think that certainly came across, there's a description of Sean Fitzpatrick during the trial as the face of Anglo. And certainly, if you went out and asked the public prior to it, I think most of them would have expected, that he would not be acquitted. But when it came down to it, listening to the evidence, and the jury listened to an awful lot of evidence over 10 weeks, there was, as it turned out, very little connecting Sean Fitzpatrick to this particular transaction. And I think that's a very important distinction, that there has to be this distinction between individual bankers and what they knew or didn't know at particular times. And the jury drew that distinction in its decisions.
Something historic has happened today. Not only have we had the first ever prosecution and conviction under this particular part of the Companies Act, this particular kind of white-collar crime, but it doesn't draw a line, does it, under Anglo-Irish Bank's part in our downfall. There is still more to be examined.
Yes, I mean, this particular section that, the prosecutions were delivered on, it goes back to 1963. So there's no case law on this particular case to look back at or compare to. But there are other cases, as we know, and one relates to Irish Life and Permanent and its relationship with Anglo-Irish Bank and how Irish Life and Permanent boosted the balance sheet of Anglo prior to its year end, allegedly. That's going to be one particular case we're going to look at. And then the other case is very specific to Sean Fitzpatrick, and it relates to his personal borrowings from Anglo-Irish Bank and how they were transferred over the bank's year end temporarily over to Irish Nationwide and then back again. So he's facing charges there, and others are facing charges in relation to the Irish Life and Permanent Anglo-Irish Bank relationship.
Tom, thank you very much for joining us this evening with that analysis.